I believe in, are we ready to roll? Cool. What's going on?
Hey, Ben, how are you?
How was my intro?
I don't know. I just got down here. I missed your intro.
You missed my intro? Well,
yeah, I missed the whole thing, but your hair looks a lot better tonight.
I know. I put a little more focus on it, and actually,
probably a little more product.
Yeah,
on it,
right? I had to settle that side down for some reason. You know,
yeah,
it's just been odd. But I'm actually going to get a haircut this week, hopefully. I got you, Braden. Braden, good to see you. I got the email. We got that in. That's perfect. That'll come up here just shortly. One thing I got to mention is, you know, this week's episode of the Common Sense MDs on fungal toenails. And I mentioned the time that you and Granddad and Bob took off my toenail.
Mm-hmm.
That was miserable.
It's not fun to have your toenail taken off, but if done right, it's not that painful.
I tell you what, there's a podiatrist in Kingsport. I forget his name. He was incredible. I've had one taken off with
Dr.
him.
Dr. Shadowski.
Yes. Wow. He was phenomenal. But one thing I'll remember is you guys put, you know, a tourniquet around my toe to block the blood flow. And then when you took it off and the blood flow rushed into the toe, it was like, it was rough. But
I'll tell you a horror story one time that I heard about was one of the doctors had taken off a toenail and they forgot to take the tourniquet off after the procedure.
Oh.
The patient lost their toe.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. I don't know. I don't remember who did it, but I wouldn't tell you anyway. But yeah, that happened.
Dang. That is a horror story.
Yeah. Always take the tourniquet off.
Yes. Always take it off.
If you use one.
It hurts, but it's in your best interest. My brother Steve is in the building. Good afternoon or good evening to you, Steve. Thank you for hanging out as always. You ready to get into some questions?
Yeah.
Let's see here. Let's start with let's get this. There's going to be some LDN questions. Let's get this in here. Hesitant to start LDN, 21-year-old male with long COVID. Does LDN cause sexual side effects? And, I actually was talking to you earlier this week. You're using LDN for long COVID quite a bit.
I started one today on LDN.
What's your thoughts on that?
And I actually switched. I had to switch one person today that didn't like the dreaming with LDN. So I just told her to take it during the day.
Oh.
So the only side effect I've ever seen really is more vivid dreams, which some people don't like. But most really it just means you're getting more REM sleep. So it's probably good for your sleep in that regard. But if you take it in the morning, you know, it really is not going to make you drowsy. So, and you're not going to dream on it in the morning. So, but I haven't had anybody complain of it causing sexual side effects. I just haven't seen that. It does seem to work. I use it for long COVID, as does the Stanford Long COVID Clinic. It's well documented, so it's not all that alternative. But we've been using it for years for a lot of other things like autoimmune disease. And, you know, I really need to do another podcast on LDN because it's really a great medicine for a lot of conditions. Don't be hesitant to start it. See how you like it.
So no libido side effects or anything like that that you've seen?
Not that I've seen.
Okay.
You know, libido side effects I've seen just from long COVID.
Yeah.
In itself. So, but good question. No, try it.
Love the LDN questions. Thank you for sending that in on email. Let's get to this one. This is a hair thinning question. This was interesting. So Dr. Andrew Huberman, who we're huge fans of, said to use a shampoo with at least 2% ketoconazole 2 to 4 times a week for hair thinning. Is this basically the dandruff shampoo that you have mentioned using?
Yes.
And
yeah.
Okay. And then is this something you would alternate with ontogeny C?
It is. Yeah. He's right. I mean, it kind of clears the pores out a little bit. You know, it's an antifungal. Ketoconazole is. I think that's better than the. Now, if you get something like Head and Shoulders, which is fine too, it has something called selenium sulfide in it that also kills fungus and opens up those pores. So, yeah, I think he's right. You should do that, you know, at least a couple times a week.
All right. Thank you for that question there. We're going to go into, this was from a listener who had a couple different questions on DHT, and I think this is something that, you know, has come up quite a bit on the show, so hopefully this helps more than just one person. We're going to go into DHT here. Please explain DHT a little more. First part of this question is, why do some people convert to more of it than others? I know a high level can be a cause of hair thinning, but what about low level, as if suppressing it in some way?
DHT is dihydrotestosterone, and it is the more potent, the most potent form of testosterone. It actually works really well. The problem with it is if it gets too high, and I don't know why some people just tend to convert to a DHT more than others. You know, it doesn't seem to be weight related to me. Like, you know, it seems that a lot of people either will convert to estradiol, aromatize the testosterone to estradiol, or convert it to a more potent form of testosterone called dihydrotestosterone. It has to do with cleavage of the molecule. So I'm not sure why some people have higher natural testosterone levels than others. Everybody's a little different, but two things that DHT can do. If it gets too high, it can cause thinning of the hair, and it also can cause prostate enlargement. So a lot of times when you use something to bring the DHT down, like a potent medicine, like a dose of finasteride that you would use for to shrink a prostate, you know, it could really hurt your sex life because you need some DHT in there for that. So you don't want to lower it too much for sure. But if you're getting thinning hair or enlarged prostate, there's some natural DHT blockers that you can do, like saw palmetto is the most common one. Stinging nettle root, pumpkin seed, even curcumin can lower both DHT and total testosterone levels. So, yeah, I mean, it's something you need to keep an eye on. You know, if you start worrying about it or thinning hair, I always check DHT levels, and men or women. So that's something, along with the estradiol level, you need to really keep an eye on. So you need some of it, but too much of it could cause those two side effects. But great question.
Wonderful question. And I do think I combined the first two. So this was actually a different question. I apologize. I know high level can be a cause, but what about low level? And I believe you answered that. Let's see here. Let's go to the third part, which is around curcumin and DHT. I heard Humerin say that curcumin made his DHT drop so low that he couldn't stand it and can no longer take curcumin. But he didn't explain what the symptoms were that he couldn't stand. Have you heard that curcumin is a natural way to lower DHT?
Yeah, like I just said, curcumin's one of those natural substances, turmeric, that can lower both total testosterone and DHT. It's a great anti-inflammatory. I love curcumin. It can lower. He didn't say it because it probably lowered his sex drive because DHT is the most potent form of testosterone that's responsible for your libido. So that's probably why he stopped taking it. So I'm sure he probably checked his levels and maybe they were too low. So a good point. Very good point. That's another thing that could lower it. So if you're getting thinning hair, you know, you might want to try it. But if it kills your sex life, get off of it.
Super interesting. Thank you for sending that in. That's I hadn't heard that around curcumin, turmeric. Speaking of testosterone, you know, we talk a lot about optimal ranges. A question here is, what range for total testosterone and free testosterone do you like to see for 60-year-old males? And we'll go with the optimal ranges here. What's your thoughts on this?
Optimal ranges for a 60-year-old is the same as in a 30-year-old. I like to see, you know, normal means nothing. Normal, you may see labs that go from 250 to 875 on the total. Free testosterone, you can measure in a few different ways, but most scales, I'm not sure if it's nanograms per deciliter, I think it is, but anywhere from like 5 to 25. So in total, I usually like to see it around at least 600, preferably 800, 900. And free, I like to see up there around 20. Free is the part that works. Mm. The rest of it is tightly bound to sex hormone binding globulin, are loosely bound to albumin. So that's where the bioavailable becomes very important. So, you know, that's a calculation you can get. But, you know, really, I look at the numbers, but I really listen to the patient and go more by how they're feeling than I do a lab. But usually testosterone levels are higher in the morning, so I usually measure it in the morning. But, and like I had a guy today and he had a lot of symptoms, his levels around 310. So I double checked it. I drew some more labs and checked a free as well as a total, and we'll base treatment on what I get from that. So a lot of times, because it varies a lot from day to day, so you want to get, you want to have a patient that has symptoms, number one, and then you want optimal levels. And a lot of times that requires a couple measurements. Not always. Sometimes you're just pretty darn sure you don't have to go to that trouble. Like if somebody has a low total, they're going to have a low free. Mm. But if they have a normal total, say 500 or so, 550 with a lot of symptoms, you get a free. Most of the time it's low. So that's what you do. You aim to get the free testosterone higher. Now, also you got to realize people's testosterone levels vary a lot, just like the DHT question. You know, a lot of people, I'm convinced, went teenage and early 20s with an average testosterone level of 12, 1500. And so those people, you know, are going to want to be around 1,000 or so. And some people just had an intrinsically lowered testosterone levels they grew up, and you know, you don't have to replace that high dosage on them. So again, look at the numbers, look at all the, certainly the numbers you have to follow when you know what you're doing with testosterone, male or female, and then you listen to the symptoms and keep an eye for estrogen, DHT, that type of thing, hematocrit.
You know, that's interesting what you said about, you know, if a male is used to having super high levels like 1,200, 1,500, and then, you know, that's what they're going to want to go back to. It's kind of, you know, we talk a lot about with hormone replacement therapy, at, you know, start feeling like yourself again. And I guess for everyone, it's a little bit different, you know, what feeling like yourself would be.
Yeah, and there's a lot of different factors for how you feel as well. Your sleep, your exercise, your diet, your stress levels. You know, unfortunately, as we get older, we have more, seems like we have more stress on us, you know, that you might not have had when you're 18 years old, when you didn't have a care in the world, you know, but.
Would you say the same thing about women in terms of like, you know, your optimal levels at 60 should be the same as your optimal levels at 30?
Yeah.
Okay. Super, super interesting. Thank you so much for that question.
And I had another patient make a great point today.
Yeah.
And fortunately, she had a really up-to-date gynecologist who was actually doing her hormone, bioidentical hormone replacement. It's rare. but she was doing it for her. And when the patient asked him, how long should I be on this? And she says, forever, for your lifetime, which I agree with.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of, if you read the, a lot of the, like American Journal of Menopause, they'll say 65, not past 65. Well, that's BS, you know. Like I put a little note on one of my things you put up for last week, that article out of the Wall Street Journal, where we've known that women, when they enter a late menopause, they're healthier. They don't come down with the same diseases as men do, you know, at 50 years old, heart disease, namely. But so you want to put, this whole article is about avoiding menopause. And that's really what we're trying to do with bioidentical hormones for years. It's not new to us, but it's a new concept to most researchers. And they're finding out that you do want to delay menopause. You don't want to go through menopause because you lose bone volume, brain volume, muscle, energy. So look at your hormone levels. Very important.
I want to dig in a little bit on the avoiding menopause thing, because I see Elise has a great question on YouTube around hormones as well. So we'll get to Elise's question in just a second. When you say avoiding menopause, like, say I'm a 37-year-old male. Say I'm a 37, 40-year-old female, and I hear that from you. Like, what would I need to do to kind of try to avoid or delay menopause?
Well, some of it's genetic. So you may get an early menopause. Certainly avoid having a hysterectomy if you can. That's, even if they don't take your ovaries, it's going to bring on an early menopause, because they're cutting some of the same nerve and blood vessel supply of the ovaries. So you're usually going to go into a menopause a year or two after you get a hysterectomy. I don't care how old you are. You know, bioidentical hormone replacement is the answer, because, and they drop off at different rates. So we begin with progesterone, which is usually the first one to drop off, testosterone closely behind. And the last thing to drop off will be estrogen. By the time that drops off, you have no periods. You're already into a lot of bone loss. So treat early. Start looking at it in the mid-40s for sure.
Super interesting. Thank you for putting in this question around testosterone that led into that topic. I'm sure there are people here who have more questions about that. So if you have questions, go ahead and put them in the comments. We're going to get to the live questions here shortly. I see Braden's got one. Thank you. Kathy's got one on Facebook. But before that, I'm just going to put you up. I got to give you some flowers. Carter is saying that you killed it today in Kingsport. So that's amazing, man.
Carter, thank you for filling in today, because, you know, a lot of people take vacations in the summer. Yeah. So Carter is our go-to. She'll work any clinic.
That's awesome. Awesome.
So she does such a great job and kept me going today. We did have a busy day, a lot of new patients. And sometimes we get some complex patients, you know, that take some time. But as I told one of my new patients today, you know, who I ended up spending a lot of time with, they asked me why I didn't take insurance. And I said, because of this, things like this visit. If I took insurance and had to do EMR, I'd have been out of here in 7 minutes. We wouldn't have gotten anywhere, you know? So she really appreciated that. And we're able to spend a lot of time and really get to the root of her problem. And so it's kind of gratifying. Not like I told her, I wouldn't be doing medicine if I had to deal with insurances every day and coding and EMRs and non-medical people telling me what to do, how many patients I need to see. So I'm in a zone with the way my practice is. When I opened it 17 years ago, I never knew it would turn it into, the timing was so great, and it enabled me to really have to become a better doctor and research a lot of stuff and, you know, think outside the box. And certainly 17 years later, it's grown like crazy, and I never would have guessed it. Here I am, 68 years old, and won't retire because I like it so much, because I'm focused on the patient. So that's an aside for people. Most people know what I do and why I do it, but it's just gratifying. And the type of patients I get are so good. They want to be there. They want help. And they want to get to the cause of their problem. Mm. You know, not just have a knee-jerk reaction of here's another medicine for you. Maybe that'll help, you know. But anyway.
No, I love that. And, you know, for one, I want to say thank you to Carter for I'm making it easy on you today because I know it was busy in Kingsport. I'm gonna give Carter her flowers. From Katie there, our operations manager. Carter's the best. I agree. Jasmine's giving you some flowers. Jasmine is our esthetician in Knoxville, both West Knoxville and
Jasmine's
Fountain
City. Awesome. Thank you, Jasmine.
But Jasmine's also going to give Carter her flowers. So there we go. I love it, guys.
Everybody's getting flowers.
I love it. Okay, we're going to get to live questions here. Before we do, I just got to make a quick little announcement for next week's show. We got a lot of regulars in here tonight. The show next week is going to be Monday, not Tuesday. Let me get the correct date here for what Monday is. Monday, July 31st at 7 is the next show. Tuesday, we will be off. And let's see here. And then August 8th, which we'll be back on our Tuesday schedule. Andy Rogers, my brother, will be filling in for Doc. So looking forward to having Andy on the show, answering your guys' questions. And we'll put tons of stuff up about that. But next week the live show will be on Monday. And another tip, we've gotten some questions around I'm not getting notified for the live show. If you click the bell part of YouTube, it will notify you. So even if you're subscribed but haven't clicked the bell, you're not going to get the notification. So if you haven't clicked the bell, it'll notify you anytime we go live. Okay, let's go to the questions here. Seeing them already come in. Thank you guys so much. If you have a question for Doc, we're going to be answering all of them tonight. And I'm going to start with Deborah over on Facebook. What are thoughts on Prevagen? What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, Prevagen is an over-the-counter for cognition. And, you know, I don't know. It's not as potent as Cognitex, I don't think. I've compared them in the past. I'd have to have them lined up to see. But I think Cognitex is more packed with some of those nutrients that are great for the brain. And I think they're probably around the same price. They're both over-the-counter. Cognitex is a life extension product that I like a lot. And there's all kinds of stuff you can do besides that, you know, lion's mane, Bacopa. There's a lot of little neurological supplements that really help, but I take the Cognitex personally. And I know a lot of neurologists that really like that one as well. Protandim's another combination one that I like a lot. It's got a little bit more Bacopa in it, but I'm not against Prevagen. Anything you can do to keep your brain sharp and have some nutrients for it. I call those medicines brain food. But,
Deborah, yeah. Thank you for that question. Over on Facebook, I see Terry's in here. Welcome in, man. Great to see you. I see Linda's here from Cincinnati. Cool. Hope you're having fun over there. All right, let's get to D. Lynn's question on YouTube. My friend has a large venous stasis. I'm going to mispronounce
stasis.
All these.
Stasis.
A large venous stasis ulcer on her calf. Her doctor is using a zinc wrap with compression. She wants to know if taking a zinc vitamin would help in the healing or any other suggestions for healing here.
It's not going to hurt for sure. Now remember, if you take too much zinc, you're going to deplete your copper. So if you're taking near 100 milligrams of zinc, you better supplement with a couple milligrams of copper. But yeah, those venous stasis ulcers are tough to heal. They really are. I saw a terrible wound in my office today needs a venous study to determine why he has that. He had it after a procedure at a dermatologist office where he had a squamous cell cancer taken off and it just won't heal. So he needs to get his circulation checked. Looks awful, but anyway, you know, compression, elevation. The problem with, you know, the circulation to the lower extremities is that the way I explained it is, you know, to get your blood to your feet, to nourish your feet, bring oxygen to your feet, you've got your heart pumping your blood volume through a muscle called your heart, through thick-walled, tough arteries. It gets to your feet, has to come back against gravity without a pump, except from maybe your calf muscle contributes some. It has to come back through these thin, fragile veins. These veins have these little valves in them. And so when the blood goes up, these valves shut to prevent backflow. Otherwise, if you didn't have these tiny valves in those veins, then all the blood by gravity would be in your feet. So you need those valves. And what happens is you get older, and after pregnancy, you know, maybe being overweight, a lot of risk factors, family history of it, you can get poor circulation, poor venous return, venous reflux. And that what will happen there is your skin won't get nourished and you'll get really thin skin. So if you start to get a brownish discoloration to your shins, you've got poor circulation, you've got venous stasis. That means blood pooling and not going anywhere. When blood doesn't go places to get reoxygenated, it's unhealthy. Not only for your legs, but also for your everything, your energy, everything. That's why venous disease is serious. And that's why I refer a lot of people to the vein company. For studies of it. And they do a wonderful job. They've worked on Jenny several times for, you know, varicose veins and all, and reflux disease. But so you need to find out how bad it is. For one thing, they can a lot of times do a procedure on your leg, like remove the greater saphenous, and you'll reestablish collateral circulation and take that out. I used to do a lot of vein work too. I still do some minor vein work. I used to take out the big ones, along with my brother Bob. He's a vascular surgeon, but yeah, those things can be hard to heal. But yeah, I mean, you know, hyperbaric oxygen sometimes, if you get an ulcer, which means an infection, it just won't heal because it doesn't have any blood supply. So I like hyperbaric oxygen. There's these various salves and things, and sometimes it requires wound debridement and all. It can be quite onerous, and you know, you got to be patient with those things. But yeah, those are tough. So I'm not, in answer to your question, I don't know if oral zinc is going to help much or not. I would definitely, almost every adult should be taking zinc supplements anyway, in my opinion.
D-Lynn, thank you for that question. I hope that helps your friend a little bit. Really good explanation of what's it called? Venous stasis?
Stasis.
Super interesting, just the way the blood is circulating. Let's go to, we'll go to over to Facebook here for a minute. Richard is asking, Dr. Rogers, if amino acids triggers mTOR and inhibits AMPK, should we avoid protein for muscle growth and maintenance and concentrate on longevity instead? Most long-lived individuals are tiny, frail little ladies with no muscle. This is actually, Richard, I really appreciate this question. And you know, kind of, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, being thin as like a longevity. You've mentioned calorie restriction being the only proven longevity tool. What's your thoughts on Richard's question? I really like it.
That's a really deep question. Obviously, Richard's done some research on the mTOR pathway, you know, which is a growth pathway. And you know, so when you're young, you need it, and when you're older, you need to really to clear senescent cells out. So you want to inhibit mTOR, mechanistic target of rapamycin is what that stands for. And AMPK is a little bit different, which I take a supplement of AMPK, really more for energy than anything. it's a little different pathway. But, you know, that's a pretty good question. Yeah. But if you want to turn into a, you may live longer, but if you want to turn into a little old frail lady, then yeah, avoid protein. I really think that you need protein. Most adults don't get enough, and you need muscle. So you got to go, you got to use those other biohacks to, you know, prolong longevity, like fasting is good for your mTOR pathway. And that's kind of how rapamycin works. It mimics fasting. So, but I've been, you know, I did a podcast on protein, and this is a subject we really have to dig into. Our new neurosurgeon friend down at West Palm Beach,
yeah,
who wants to come on and do some podcasts with me. So make a note of that, Ben. And I'm going to have a really good podcast with him.
What's the
about this?
What do you want to? I'm going to write it down. What's your?
Well, this
question.
Copy that question down. So yeah, really, you know, it's interesting. You know, a lot of times, from what I've witnessed is that if you live into your 90s, especially your mid 90s, the men are more likely to make it than the women are into their hundreds. That's what I've experienced. But certainly women live longer. But I just think you got to look at quality life and health span as well. You know, we're not here just to live. We're all playing a losing game. We're all going to die. So we want to stay as healthy as we can. And I think, you know, protocols that'll biohack mTOR and AMPK really help. I like protein. And that's one reason why I take the, you know, the essential amino acids, perfect aminos every day, along with a little bit of creatine as well. Mm. And I certainly take a collagen supplement as well, but I think you need muscle growth, to maintain bone, to maintain brain, to get rid of fat. It's for your energy. It's for your, it's really for maintenance of all your body functions. So I'm big on, growing muscle, because think about it, when you stop growing muscle, that's when you get old. That's when you get weak. So, you know, I don't want to turn into a tiny, frail little lady with no muscle.
I am.
That's a great question, though. We'll address that. I'll get him on here. Ask him about that when you email him tomorrow, Ben. We're going to set up a podcast maybe this week.
Yeah, I'm looking this up for. I see Ruth is in West Palm, and his name is Dr. Osborne, and it's a concierge longevity clinic in West Palm Beach. We're going to be actually recording an episode of the Common Sense MD with him, hopefully Friday. Yeah. So Dr. Osborne is.
Yeah, can't wait to talk with him. If y'all read his book this week, he has a really good book.
Yeah.
I forget what the name of it is. You sent it to me. But it's really interesting and fascinating. He's certainly on the longevity pattern.
Yes.
It's interesting because he's a neurosurgeon that is really interested in longevity.
Yeah.
I mean, he knows all about rapamycin and mTOR and all this stuff, AMPK. So it's going to be a really interesting thing. And as a matter of fact, I'll lead off with that question and see what his ideas about it are. But that's kind of my feelings about it.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I've heard you talk a lot about how, you know, when we're younger, you want growth. But when we're older, you don't want growth because it could be cancer cells, stuff like that.
You're right.
So
yeah, that's the old question. IGF-1, you want it higher, or, you know, stimulated or not. Plus you want to repair those senescent cells. A lot of times when you get older, you know, your body's not as good as clearing out trash out of your cells. And the pathways to do that don't work as well. So you need to kind of biohack your way into better functioning, especially it's, you know, starts in the mitochondria. So which AMPK has a lot to do with, but that's a great question.
I'm going to put Christy's question up from Facebook here about BPC-157. I've seen a few videos about BPC-157. It sounds like amazing for aching joints and muscles. What's your thoughts on BPC-157?
Yeah, I love it. You know, Body Protection Complex 157. You know, it's a peptide, which means a string of amino acids. And yeah, it's really probably the only peptide. I take it myself. It's the only peptide that I like orally because it really helps your gut as well. You've heard Robin talk about it a lot. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's a really good. That's MK677. That's a little different. But BPC-157 is different.
Oh, there we go. There we go. We had it. There we go. That's the explain
yeah, so
this episode
go back
for you, Christy.
Man, you had short hair there, Ben. but yeah, listen to that podcast. It's an amazing peptide. It really is. It works orally as well as, injectable. You can use that along with alpha-thymosin a lot of times for healing up tendonitis and things. So listen to Robin's thing on that. You'll get an education, but I really like BPC-157.
All right. Thank you for that, Christy. Let's go back over to YouTube and get to Elise's question. We touched a little bit on this earlier tonight. What is recommended if I want to find out if I need hormone replacement and my doctor is not concerned about it? I'm 65 and I'm possibly dealing with things related. Any tests to take? Elise, this is such a common question. One, can you talk to Elise about how to talk to her doctor about it and go?
I wouldn't even talk to them about it. They're not going to know anything about it. So don't waste your time. Just come to somebody like us or somebody that does a lot of work with bioidentical hormones, because they're not going to know enough about it to advise you on anything. And plus, they're probably going to poo-poo it because they don't know about it. Doctors are a weird group of people, let me tell you. I've been hanging around them all my life. And a lot of times, if they don't know something about something, they poo-poo it. So doctors can get arrogant in that manner. And I found that especially true with hormone replacement therapy, because they probably read the Women's Health Initiative from 14, 15 years ago and are scared of hormone replacement. But you should be scared of not taking hormone replacement. Like I said, you want to delay menopause forever if you can, but you don't want to have periods your whole life, but you certainly want to keep your hormone levels up. So you need all the female hormones checked, and you need to really come in for something like a Cleveland Heart Panel, which will have it all on there, as well as your adrenals, your deep dive on your thyroid, your inflammatory markers, your insulin resistance numbers, which Dr. Osmond talks about so much that we're so huge on. So come in and get a Cleveland panel. And if you if you live in a city that doesn't have anybody that knows much about hormones, you need to read the book by Dr. Pam Smith, all about women's hormones. Read that book. You get a good education on what I think is the world's most knowledgeable person about female hormones. So do that and get checked and go to somebody who knows what they're doing with that. You'll thank me for that advice someday.
Elise, thank you for that. I hope that helps. I'll repeat that because it's important and we talk about it all the time on this show. All About Women's Hormones from Dr. Pamela Smith. That's a name you'll hear quite a bit on this show and on all of our shows. On the YouTube channel at Performance Medicine. Real quick, team, can we get the name of books on Enneagram from our podcast with Ro? I need to do this for Cindy. Cindy, I apologize that I have not gotten to that. So if we can help
that
her
was
out.
A great podcast and it's a great book. I read it in an afternoon or a couple hours and really helped me figure myself out. And it's an awesome book.
We'll put it in the comments.
We'll find that out for you.
Put it in the Facebook comments.
I have a copy of it right here somewhere. If Jenny's listening, she can bring it down.
But, Cindy, we'll get to that. Just stay on the lookout. It'll be in there in just a second. Let's keep going here. Where am I? I'm going back to Facebook from Kathy. Are you familiar with Dr. Vaughn in Alabama that is treating long COVID patients who is doing lab testing for microclots? According to Dr. Risha Pretorius training, using a special procedure. And if you are, do you have an opinion on the validity I hope I'm reading that right, Kathy. It seems it's a particular procedure. Are you interpreting that, doc?
Yeah, I've never heard of him, and I don't know. Certainly, COVID was a clotting disorder for sure. You can almost assume that you had microclots. So I don't know if you want to get, if you have to go through a lot of testing or just treat it. You know, you can use serapeptase. Of course, I recommend a baby aspirin for most all my patients anyway, unless there's some reason why they can't take it. And I talk to them about those reasons. But, you know, Natacane, serapeptase, or a 81 milligram coated aspirin. And maybe looking at some of the other inflammatory natures. Like when I do a Cleveland Heart Panel, I check for those inflammatory markers. I'm not sure you need, you know, any really esoteric testing like that or not. You know, a lot of times you can just assume, hey, I'm having microclotting. I need protection from it. And some people are more predisposed to it than others. So look at your inflammatory markers and look at your endothelial, the health of your endothelium. One thing I want to do is get another carotid IMT scan in August. We do them in our office every couple months. Some folks come up from Atlanta and look at your carotid IMT, intimal media thickness test, which is a really good way to assess your heart as well as your carotid arteries and your endothelium. Remember, you're only as healthy as your vasculature, as your arteries. That's a good statement that a lot of people use, but it's true.
And one thing I want to put in here for Katie, we're going to, you mentioned the carotid IMT, and we'll be putting this up because there is a little bit of time. We are doing that test in the Kingsport office Thursday, August 31 from 9 to 12. You'll be seeing stuff about that, but I wanted to mention it just because you brought it up in talking with Kathy here. We're doing it in the Kingsport office, carotid IMT ultrasounds, Thursday, August 31, 9 to 12. You'll see more of that from us just to make sure everybody gets a chance to do it if they would like. Great question, Kathy. Thank you so much. We're going to stick on the long COVID topic here for Braden. Braden is asking, have you used LDN for long COVID patients with head pressure / overall headache fatigue?
Yeah, definitely. I use it every day for that.
Okay.
Like I said, even the Stanford long COVID clinic uses it. So it's not that far out or alternative, really. We use it for a ton of stuff. You know, with long COVID, the most typical symptoms I see are brain fog, fatigue, shortness of breath on exertion. And then you have all the other stuff you can see happening, like POTS and some of the things like that. But so yes, the answer is an unequivocal yes. And I'm also using methylene blue, which I love too.
Braden, that might help you. Methylene blue is something we've been talking quite a bit about. Do some digging on methylene blue. It's super, everybody loves it. Oh, there we go. That's for Kathy there.
The Road Back to You. What a great book.
Or Cindy. Sorry. That is for that's for Cindy. Road Back to You. This is an Enneagram book. We talked about this with Ro on the Common Sense MD a couple weeks ago. Thank you, team, for putting that up there. Let's see here. Thank you.
A lot of people really like that podcast, and I really love that podcast that Ro did.
That was a lot of fun.
She does Enneagram coaching, and she's fantastic. I've referred several patients to her, and she's doing a great job with them.
Thank you, team, for getting that up there. Let's keep going here. I think we're at Lisa. Lisa always shares the broadcast. Thank you so much, Lisa. That means a lot to us. What do you think about prescribed synthetic calcium, and can it affect your kidneys and other organs? If it does, when you have low calcium issues, what's the best, safest alternative? Thank you.
Yeah, I don't like the supplement calcium. I'd rather you get your calcium in your food, like spinach and beef liver and those things. I just don't like any of the synthetic. I suppose if you have a really low calcium level in your blood. It gets complex. Had a patient last week that had a very low calcium level, and you know, I had to look a lot further and found out that she has nephrotic syndrome, so she's losing protein from her urine, from her kidneys, and that low calcium really was not low at all. It was just appeared low because she had very low protein levels, low albumin levels. So when I got an ionized calcium level, it was okay. So yeah, I don't like extra calcium. You shouldn't need it. You know, you might need to get in an endocrinology workup if you really have truly low calcium levels. And usually I only see that when you've had your parathyroid mistakenly removed through a thyroidectomy or something, but very rare. Hypercalcemia is a different matter. Then you check PTHs and look at your parathyroids. You know, it's usually a parathyroid adenoma. So just eat more. And, you know, of course, I always talk about D with K, yeah, as far as that go. But low calcium, you really need to get an ionized calcium. Look a little deeper into it. They may not be. They may be. I don't know. But good point.
And I'm gonna put this up here from Lisa. Just for one, I'm just super proud of you, Lisa. You can see here in her question, now down 63 pounds. She's gone from 170 units of insulin three times daily and 40 at bedtime of the concentrated big dog insulin down to basically none. That is unbelievable. I'm so yeah, proud of you. No insulin. That's amazing. That's amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's just amazing that you did that. Like I've said many times, you can cure type 2 diabetes and get off insulin.
Yep.
Matter of fact, I never like to use insulin in type 2s because it's just an insulin. It doesn't cure the problem. Yep. It is the problem. Too much insulin, it doesn't work. So if it goes too long, you may have to end up on it, but hopefully not. You can lose weight, eat very low carb, and get off your and cure your own diabetes, which sounds like what you've done. I love fermented food. That's probably that question. Yeah, I do love fermented food. I think it's really good for your gut, as well as some other things, inflammatory markers, et cetera. Very healthy to eat. Kombucha. You can drink kombucha. You
know? Lisa, we are so proud of you. Thank you so much for putting that in there. I hope that gives some of you guys with us live tonight some encouragement. Thank you for putting that in, Lisa. All right, let's keep going here. I want to get to, this is another success. One step forward, I was on Mounjaro and lost 36 pounds. That's amazing. I wanted to keep taking it every other week just to maintain. The $25 coupon ran out. Do you know an affordable way I could take it just to maintain, and how often? Katie or Carter might need to jump in on this one, as far as some of these, some of the pricing goes for the alternatives.
There is you probably don't know this, but there's some compounded, you know, but she does. There's some compounded Mounjaro available, you know, tirzepatide. So that when they do a compound, they have to make it different than the brand name. So they'll use a little different form of it, add a vitamin, something that'll actually help it, and it's legal. So we have found, you know, tirzepatide and semaglutide from a compounder in Nashville that we use that's very reputable. And so we order a lot of it. Yeah, the problem with Mounjaro, which is not indicated for weight loss, it's indicated for diabetes, they will come up with an identical problem or brand for weight loss. And it'll be the biggest, Lilly will put it out, who makes Mounjaro, and it'll be the biggest selling drug of all time. I'll promise you that. They're not going to pay for it. They're just not going to do it. You know, my nurses spend all day trying to get these things prior approved, and it doesn't work. So the compounded is affordable, and it works really well. And sometimes I have people, you know, because none of it's cheap, not even the compounded.
No.
It's at least a fourth of the price of the brand. But they space it out because a lot of people will need a maintenance dose of it. Some people can eat very low carb, intermittent fasting, and get off all of it. Other people that have a lot of insulin resistance in them, you know, they're pretty heavy, then they may need maintenance for the rest of their life. So, but I'm okay with you spacing it out and using a lower dose even. That's kind of the way we feel about it. So ask our office about it.
I'm going to put this up from Carter just to give you some ranges here that we're seeing. So this is the compounded Mounjaro called tirzepatide. Pricing is between $290 and $575, depending on the dose. And it seems that One Step Forward can, might not have to do it as often. So she can, could make it stretch out a little bit.
And she probably used one of the lower doses. The 575 is going to be the biggest dose, which you probably don't need.
Carter, thank you so much for putting that in there. I hope that helps One Step Forward over on YouTube. Let's keep going. Let's see here. I want to put this up from Cole Meyer's daughter. One, because I love you. Thank you for being here. It seems they watched the video with Robin today on birth control. I hope some people share that one because, like I said earlier, it's something that, me being 37, I have a sister, you just didn't have those conversations, when we were in high school. So thank you so much, Cole Meyer's daughter, for watching. Okay, let's keep going. I see some more questions. Seems Elise, let me see if I can find a... Oh, let's get to Steve on Facebook, and then we'll get to you, Elise. My brother Steve is asking, what is the latest thinking on rapamycin for people who have high cholesterol? I am taking green tea extract for EGCG, and I'm not going to attempt to pronounce that, Steve. Epigallocatechin 3 gallate, and charging it up with niacin. I hope I did okay.
Yeah, of course, I love niacin, and I take a green tea extract as well. I don't really care about high cholesterol so much like some people do. Certainly, I'd rather use niacin if I could rather than a statin. I'm not saying statins aren't useful sometimes. Sometimes they are. Not because they bring your cholesterol down, because they help inflammation. So it just depends on whether I use a low-dose statin or not. Sometimes I do. But I always try to use a water-soluble, very low-dose one. Rapamycin, I don't care if you got high or low cholesterol. It's for a different purpose entirely. So that's what we talked about, mTOR, and that pathway that you need to inhibit. I like what you're – those are good. Those are certainly good supplements. Resveratrol is another one that a lot of people talk about with longevity. But rapamycin is so interesting. I hope that we can talk a lot more about rapamycin. The only real contraindication of rapamycin that I know or side effect is it may cause canker sores in your mouth if you're prone to get them. Theoretically, it suppresses your immune system, but when you use it in those low weekly doses, it really strengthens your immune system. But it's an ongoing conversation about rapamycin. But like I say, if somebody has high cholesterol, I wouldn't worry about it. I don't think it's going to affect that as far as that goes in my thinking.
All right, Brother Steve, I hope that helps. We're going to keep talking about rapamycin. I'm sure, it's such a, I don't know if it's trendy the word, but like rapamycin's becoming like a topic in the kind of integrative functional medicine world. So thank you, Steve, for putting that in there. I want to put this up from Chuck because this might help One Step Forward on YouTube. Chuck is saying, speaking of Mounjaro, Blue Cross Blue Shield again declined covering for me, but they approved Ozempic. They're basically the same price. I don't really understand. Thanks to Robin Riddle for helping me with this. The West Knoxville team is awesome. They are incredible. Huge shout out to the West Knoxville Performance Medicine team. Thank you guys.
Awesome.
That's incredible.
Oh, I'll take the Ozempic. Certainly take the Ozempic. It's an awesome drug. There may be a little bit more nausea with Ozempic, but certainly, you know, we've used a lot more Ozempic than we have Mounjaro because it's been more available. It was first out there, and we've had just tremendous success with it. So definitely take it. You know, work your way up. Expect a little nausea maybe, but it should go away. Try it. And I don't understand insurances either. I mean, nothing about insurance do I understand. That's why I don't take insurance for office visits. It just clouds everything, makes you mad. It's just not worth it. So, but you have to have it for disaster. That's what insurance is for. But congratulations, they covered it for your Ozempic. Good, because that stuff's expensive.
No, that's awesome, you Chuck. Know? We love you so much, man. Thank you. Thank you for putting that in there. And thanks for the shout out to the West Knox team. Let's see here. Let's keep moving. Who have I missed? I know I'm. Let's get to Elise. I hope this helps Elise here. It's a little two parts. I also wonder about protocols for weight loss while under extreme stress. I usually manage with diet, exercise, supplements, but the stress is unrelenting and I'm struggling again. I'm pre-diabetic. I need to lose 20 to 25 pounds. What's your advice here for Elise over on YouTube?
That's a great comment. You know, there's one or two types of people. People that lose weight with stress, people that gain weight with stress. So everybody's metabolism is a little bit different. But, you know, stress increases your cortisol. And cortisol in general is like taking prednisone. It increases your weight. So you have to, number one, think about getting rid of the stress. You know, it's very hard to manage stress. You know, but if you get rid of it, you know, one thing is as you get older, you get wiser, you know. My dad told me that would happen, and it certainly has happened. So I do some things that are a little bit different than my old self. Number one, I learned to say no. I'm very good at saying no. And if I don't want to do something, I don't do it anymore. And the other thing, I tend to be a delegator, you know. I like to delegate things to people that are can get it done quicker, better, that I don't have time to do it. I delegate a lot. Of course, that's pretty easy on me because when you have 50 employees working for you, it's easy to delegate. You know, try to look at why am I so stressed out? Is this just temporary or is this going to be prolonged? Because it's not just your weight it's affecting. It's affecting your health. It kills people. It causes cancer. It causes diabetes. It causes heart disease. You know, it's probably as much of a risk factor as smoking is, to be honest with you. So it's just a killer. So get rid of it. Don't manage it. Get rid of it. If you have a terrible work environment, get something else. A lot of times I'll say that and people say, I can't, I'm trained for this job. Well, do something different. Life is short. Do something different. Totally change what you're doing. Make a major change. But, you know, again, I think the best antidote for stress is, like you say, exercise. You know, and certainly I love intermittent fasting. You just don't get hungry as much. You know, there's all kinds of supplements that can aid with pre-diabetics. You know, alpha lipoic acid, cinnamon, berberine is probably my favorite one. Use that a couple times a day on some people. So, and even, you know, like Chuck was saying, Ozempic, Mounjaro. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff up there. Just please go for some good advice. Seek some good counsel. Maybe listen to my podcast with Ro.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I talk to a lot of psychologists. I refer out a lot. We have our own psychologist, Dr. Robin Branca, at our office that works with us because it's a vital part of not only weight loss, but health in general. You know, that's why we have a nutritionist. We have a physical therapist. You know, it's complex stuff.
Yeah.
So think about that. Think about getting to the root cause of that problem. You know, and it's a lot of times, especially women, they take everything on themselves, you know, and then their health just suffers. I see that all the time in my practice, you know, because as a family doctor, you see people from birth to 100 years old. You follow them. And a lot of times I'll see you know, girls in high school, then women in college, and they graduate, they have children, they have all these responsibilities, they usually have to work. By the time they're 50, just at the wrong time when they're going into menopause, they're obese because they've gained 5 pounds this year, five pounds, because it becomes harder to keep weight off. Your metabolism slows down. You know, most of them are underactive with their thyroid or overactive with their adrenals. So this is something that can be handled. As one of my favorite psychologists tells me, you should listen to this, because you think you're a unique individual. Your problems are not unique. They're common. So you're not the only one having that kind of stress.
Yeah.
And do something about it. Do something about it.
And Elise, I'm seeing some of your comments here, and I just want to say I'm praying for you. I'm thinking about you, and I hope you continue to come and hang out on this show. But definitely get rid of the stress, and it's definitely clear where the stress is coming from. So definitely do what you got
to
do.
Sometimes stress is. I talk to people all day long that, I mean, they have a family member that's dying, or they. You know, these terrible situations, but, it'll get better. Mm. You have to have hope. You have to keep a positive attitude. You have to seek help, friends, family, therapist, things get better. A lot of things are affected by past trauma. Another book that Roe recommended to me was The Body Keeps the Score. Mm. That's a really book that I enjoyed reading that Roe had recommended to me. So, anyway, we can help you. Please reach out, and there is hope. So
I'm going to put this up here. This is for you, Elise. Definitely right after the show, watch this one. Right after we end here, we're gonna call it a show in just a few minutes. Watch this video with Jamie Winship. What do you hope for? And then what I would do is I would watch all the Jamie videos. We have about 5 or 6. If it says Jamie Winship and it's on our channel, watch it. But please do that, right after this show. I think it'll really be, could be a game changer for you. All right, let's keep going here. Thank you, Elise. We love you. Let's see here. Where am I at? I want to get D Lynn's question. She has two here. D Lynn's asking, did you read up on the fermented honey and garlic?
I forgot all about that, Ben. Dang. Why didn't you remind me?
I'll write this down.
Put that down.
Okay. So D Lynn, we're gonna do a rain check on this one. And then real quick for D Lynn, do we need D with K or K2?
K2. Okay. When K2 is the form of vitamin K that you need, specifically MK7, if you really want to look into it, because there's plenty of forms of vitamin K1 and K2. And you need the MK7, which is the best form of K2.
I love it. I see Elise is a Jamie fan. We love Jamie so much. Thank you for putting that in there. Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please share the podcast with your friends. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. We will see you guys next time.